Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. It's a new season. I'm your host, Nancy.
I'm your host, Bits.
And we are jumping for joy. Not really, we're seated, but we are so excited because today is an incredible day. It is the season premiere of season 22, Destination Canada.
Destination Canada. It feels like one of those like outdoor, fight against the elements show where you're kind of like left in the wild to fend for yourself. I thought that, but then I went through the whole internal monologue of, well, yeah, I guess because there's Top Chef Canada.
There is literally Top Chef Canada.
Yeah. Anyways, oh my God, Nancy, I'm so happy to be back. I feel like it's just been the longest year ever. We did a lot of fun stuff with that time. We talked to a lot of cool people. We covered great British baking show. We recapped the season 10 of famously Kristen's premiere arrival onto the Top Chef scene. But we are back on the on-air circuit of Top Chef, new season.
Doing what we love.
Oh, it feels so good. It feels so good. Before we get into tonight's episode, we just want to shout out a couple wonderful collabs we did in the Bravo universe recently. Nancy and I were on a lovely podcast called Above Deck. So for anybody who loves the sort of like garbage side of Bravo as much as you love the kind of hoity-toity Top Chef world, we dropped by. We talked with that crew about our feelings on Traitor, Summer House, all that other dumb shit.
And Below Deck, and most importantly.
And Below Deck, of course. And for those that don't give a shit at all about that, we were also on our friends, the LA Food Pods show, where we participated in their Top Chef draft, which was our first draft. And it, Nancy, I don't know about you, but it like reminded me why I'm so glad we don't do a draft.
Yeah.
I think we suck at it, and we're also like, everybody's a winner. Like, it's too hard. It's too much.
Summed it up perfectly. Like, I have never been a particularly competitive person. Like, I don't like to willingly enter into like silly competitions. I think because I usually fail at them.
Completely agree.
But also, we just, on Compliments to the Chef, everyone's doing their best. We know
it's
that everyone's
name.
Trying really hard.
It's in the name.
We love
We're
you.
Out here dropping compliments. And so anyways, if you want to get our hot take, completely unfounded takes in a lot of instances, definitely tune into that app. It's going to be a fun time. We're going to be probably doing a few crossover things with them throughout the season. And for those that are maybe just coming on to our podcast or discovered us in the off season, welcome. We're so happy you're here. Just a quick refresher. We are primarily a Top Chef coverage podcast, as you'll see us in our kind of true form over the next few months. But we also have a ton of amazing guests on the show, both related to the Top Chef cinematic universe, and those kind of like around it, BTS folks, folks in the culinary scene, the food world. Mm-hmm. And we like to cover like silly little competition shows from here and there, but
we're at the main event now, baby. We are the main event. Top Chef.
This is the elimination challenge of our pod. So, Nancy,
please don't eliminate us.
I think we need to get into this episode.
Yes, absolutely. So, a new day dawns over Canada. We find ourselves in Toronto. The sun rises. Tom, Gail, and Kristen don their Canadian tuxedos. And Bits, I think, let's begin.
All right, Nancy, amuse-bouche reactions to episode 1, but also just season 22. What are we feeling? What are your immediate reactions? Where's your head at?
I am exploding with excitement. Like, I feel it in my fingers. I feel it in my toes. Top Chef is all around us, and everybody knows. It's just so exciting. I'll keep my amuse-bouche amusing. I am feeling like, right out the gate, we have a great group of chefs. And I know that because of that, this is going to be a nonstop entertaining season. I am ready for the onslaught of talent, of excitement, of innovation. And I'm just excited to greet the day. How are you feeling about this?
Amen, brother. I'm feeling like this episode, plus one of everything you've just said, but this episode had serious, like, sex appeal. Like, it was just, like, very just sleek and, like, ooh. It just felt buttoned up and very fun in a sort mm-hmm. of just modern, I don't know. I'm not describing it well, but the feeling of it just felt such, oh, we're back. It's like a return to form. Yes. You know, we're back in a city. We're in,
yeah, like a major metropolis
skyscraper, and they're in their like cool little chef, you know, house looking out at the view. So, all good feelings, and I'm so excited to get into the specifics here. So, I think we need to just like do it. Like you mentioned, we have a very fun little opening. I think maybe what I'm getting at with the like sexiness of this episode was like it opened in a very cinematic way. We have, this sort of like B-roll of the chefs traveling and making their way to Toronto, a few sound bites. We've got the Manhattan Bridge in all its glory. And people are making their way up the continent. And
then the camera focuses in on my absolute favorite visual gimmick in the entire Top Chef cinematic universe, the knife block. The Top Chef knife block incites in me so much tingly excitement. Like, I just get a rush of joy when I see that. So when I see this knife block and all the chefs pull a knife and get into their respective cars, I am just brimming with happiness.
Yes, I honestly like the knife block, and then on top of that, you have them getting into their little sponsored vehicles and transportation. It's just
like a caravan of Top Chef.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Cinematic is the perfect word. It was dramatic. It was like no words, just go grab your knife, get in the car, get whisked away to a mystery destination. Like very Mission Impossible.
It felt just deluxe. Yeah, it just felt deluxe. And on top of that, we should talk about. They've really upped the ante this season as far as just the sort of prize offerings here. So on the table, we have $250,000 sponsored by Saratoga. Toga's up. We got to get our togas water for next. The official water. I don't drink any other water. I'm sorry, Meghan Markle.
I don't drink any other water.
you wait, need to put that Saratoga in your dog treats. Anyways, very deep cut on that one. Sorry. Okay, so I digress, but $250,000 sponsored by Toga. We had
furnished by
Delta
Toga.
Diamond medallion status plus
which Bits knows is hard to get.
That is hard to get. I think I'll get it this year, but it's tough. It's hard out here for a pimp. I only have platinum. So on top of that, you get $125,000 furnished by Delta. For airline travel, that alone is like
that's a, like a lifetime.
Are you just
of
never
airline
gonna
travel?
Yeah, you're never gonna have to pay to get on a plane ever again.
It's incredible. Think of like the family vacations you can go on with that, or just like the freedom and flexibility that brings you.
I would just only fly first class ever.
Like I think that if I could pick any game show prize to ever win, it would be this.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And then on the more chefy side of things, they've also added to their prize for the first time ever a dinner at the James Beard House in New York City, which is hugely prestigious. That is not an honor that gets bestowed lightly upon people. And so it's just so – that has to be from an achievement perspective something that all of these chefs are really salivating mm-hmm. over.
Did you think it was a little funny? So the final thing is, along with the Food & Wine magazine, along with the Aspen Festival, the chefs will get to present at the James Beard Award, which I was mm-hmm. like, maybe you start with that one. With everything
else. Yeah, it was
else.
Funny that they ended with that.
And you get to give an award. It was just a little like, oh, okay. I will say that it feels like there is very much a kind of predator meme handshake happening this season between James Beard and Top Chef. You know, these things are
a lot of
sort
of
like around each other, but I feel like there's like a real like official stamp of approval from James Beard mm-hmm. now that we see this sort of like offering.
Which is huge. I mean, look, a lot of these chefs are nominated for James Beard Awards. A lot of them go on to win James Beard Awards. So like, I don't think that Top Chef and the James Beard Foundation are strangers to each other, but this feels like a real endorsement on the part of James Beard, which is huge and just adds to this prestige of this show and adds to what confounds me about how this is part of Bravo. Like, I actually think there's no better respected competition TV show in any genre.
Yeah.
But Bravo, wild. I think, is like what lets that be. Bravo keeps Bravo's it at great. A level of like attainability and access in a way that when you watch something like Chef's Table, it just feels so other. You know, like, wow, that it's beautiful and it's wonderful to watch, but it doesn't feel there's an accessibility that this, I don't know, network provides. Yeah. I'm not sure, but who knows? Next year it's going to be like on James Beard Network or something.
maybe they're starting their own streaming channel. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But another thing that I want to talk about after we've now just, you know, gotten this incredible prize package is let's take a moment to admire the work of Compliments to the Chef pod guest James Connolly, the production designer, on the design of this kitchen.
Very cool kitchen. Very cool kitchen.
Gorgeous. The maple leaf that goes like from the doors and like the windows all the way down to the benches where they, like, they work. It is gorgeous. It's classy. It's clean. James, if you're listening, I'm sure you're not, but you were such a fabulous interview. If you want to listen to that, he talks all about how they think through the design. It is a beautiful kitchen this year.
Yeah. It
feels chic, sophisticated.
Yes.
And it's just like
just the creative direction of this season is like they thought about it. It just felt very put together.
But Bits, let's get into the food, the main event, what we've come here to discuss, which is, and the chef sort of got a hint of it on the way to the kitchen, is this is going to be a group challenge. They've been put into cars via knife draw. So they're assuming that they're going to be working together, and they would be correct. Do you want to talk about what the challenge was?
Yes. So our very first quickfire of season 22. This quickfire continued to kind of like it took a while for us to kind of like get the full picture of what this quickfire challenge would be. We start off with the judges coming in, saying their lows, and they ask the chefs to grab only one ingredient from the pantry. They had 30 seconds to do that. So immediately people kind of like sprinted, grabbed whatever based on whatever sort of like internal logic. At that point, they bring that back that single ingredient. They're informed by the judges, you're now going to be on a team with your car mates, and you're going to work in those teams of three to create a dish featuring six ingredients. Now, at this point, you're probably wondering, six ingredients? The chefs only have three. So we get something kind of similar to the Quickfire season 21, where there's sort of like a constraint or like an ingredient direction put in place by each of the individual judges. So in addition to the three ingredients these chefs have to use, they also have to use one ingredient selected by each of the judges. So Kristen picks tomatoes, Gail picks chives, Tom with the curveball, of course, goes for clams. And then on the table for this challenge is $15,000 in quick fire, quick cash.
You like the branding of quick fire, quick cash?
Yeah, I think you could have just, I don't know. It was like a lot. It's like kind of a mouthful, honestly.
Quick fire, sponsored quick by Wells Fargo.
Together we'll go far. So anyways, they have to make a dish with those three ingredients plus the three that they get from the judges. Nancy, I know I think more than anything, we love to just debate a quick fire challenge. Where is your head at with this one? How are you feeling?
So I really liked the original, like, pick an ingredient. You have to make a dish with all those ingredients. That feels like a really good table stakes first quick fire out of the gate. Not too complicated, but just complicated enough where they can pull it together and there's a little teamwork in there. I was a bit surprised by the added judges' ingredients. But I don't think it complicated it too much. I think it was just, you know, three more ingredients to use. It kind of harkened back to last season's first episode where each of the judges had a different prompt. And I think that, you know, it's just for them, they're sort of establishing both from the chef testins to the judges, like who they are, and from the judges to the chefs, like, you know, we want to get to know you. If you're bringing your whole selves to this competition, we're going to bring some of ourselves as well. And so, you know, I thought it was fun. I thought it was lighthearted. I am looking forward to more interesting challenge quick fires. I think that quick fires are where a lot of creativity in terms of challenge design comes out.
Yeah.
And I look forward to these getting more and more complex as the season goes on.
Well put. I think even to just linger on, I do think like one thing that kind of flattened what we ultimately saw as the final product for a lot of these dishes was the clams. I think clams really pushed a lot of these teams into the soup corner or the broth corner. So we saw a lot of kind of soup-based, bouillabaisse type dishes come out. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that was just sort of a direct reaction to how do I deal with clams. And chives to me always – I guess chives is – chives are very versatile, but they're also very – yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's like an opinionation to both clams and chives that feel less I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's just hindsight is 2020.
I actually feel like the real red herring here was the tomatoes. Like chives, clams to me, I get. You can make you know, like a white wine sauce and throw some chives in there, yada, yada, yada. But tomatoes to me, I think that – personally, when I think of the ingredients that most of the chefs have, I mean, the second they had clams, chives, I was like, oh, these people are going to make chowders. Like the first thing I think of with clam is chowder. And so I sort of – they sort of telegraphed that almost onto the chefs and we saw a lot of soup. And why don't we get into the soups we saw?
Love
so
it.
We have five teams. On the purple team, we have Kat, Corwin, and Henry. The green team, Tristan, Massimo, and Shui. Blue team is Zubair, Anya, and Bailey. The yellow team is Caesar, Katiana, and Mimi. And the red team is Lana, Vinny, and Paula. Do you have a team you want to start
Paola.
With? Paola.
Paola. I made me think of Laura. Let's start purple. So the purple team had two corns actually, and Fresno chili, which is kind of crazy. We had a lot of corn. A lot of corn was drawn, actually, across the board, which I wanted to ask your thoughts on that. I think maybe it's just sort of you see people going for the same thing and you just figure, you know, go with the majority rule and see what happens.
I mean, I honestly wouldn't even get so deep with it. Like, they had 30 seconds to pick. I think a lot of people just grabbed it.
So
we have the three of them, Kat, Corwin, and Henry, making a corn sofrito clams with pickled Fresnos. And they seem to work well together. They seem to like agree on something quickly and just getting going. I was really impressed with Corwin right out of the gate here. He seemed... Again, we don't know these guys yet, guys and gals. So everything we're going on first impressions. But my first impression of Corwin here is very calm, very level-headed. I think he seemed like a good team player. I'd like to see how that carries him in the rest of the season. That's just an offhand observation.
Yeah, I think this team was definitely the most chill of the five. Least drama. Not to say there was a ton of drama anywhere. On the yellow team, we also had some corn. So that was Katiana, Cesar, and Mimi. And they had apple, fennel, and corn. And they produced a fennel and apple soup with clams and a corn and chorizo relish. Mm-hmm. This looked beautiful to me. I also thought that this team already just looked super strong. I felt like I got a really clear understanding. We got some, you know, photos of some of the plates that like Katiana has made. Her food looks beautiful. I'm super excited to see just more from her this season. We talked a bit about her on the LA Food Pod, as she's a chef from the LA area. So very exciting stuff there. And this, the soup was well received. The texture was great. Mm-hmm. It felt like it had been on a menu for years, which I think is really high praise.
Yes. Yeah. This is a completely stray thought. I would have loved to have seen a gazpacho in this episode. I don't know why. They did a ton of soups. I feel like you could have easily done like a chilled tomato gazpacho with the clam either like marinated or fried, like put right on top. That's just me. I love gazpacho.
Little maple syrup gazpacho.
Oh my gosh. I just love gazpacho. Anyway, speaking of maple syrup, so Tristan, Massimo, and Shuai, their ingredients were, they were the green team, and their ingredients were maple syrup, bok choy, and king oyster mushroom. They ended up making steamed clams with pickled bok choy. They used a little bit of the maple syrup in the pickling of the bok choy. And the judges also really liked this. They thought it was really clever. They were really impressed with the use of maple syrup not being too overpowering, that it really undercut a lot of the flavors in their dish.
I loved that Tristan like poking fun at Shuai just being like, yo, he just went like maple syrup right off the rip.
Yeah, he literally said,
you're in Canada for 5 seconds.
Yeah, I thought that he,
I had the same thought. I was like, but he could be like playing, you know, chess and we're all playing checkers by being like, oh, surprise, it's fucking Canada Challenge. Yeah.
Yes. I love it. And so then we move on to, let's talk about maybe the blue team, Zubair, Anya, and Bailey. So we see Zubair and Bailey sort of like bond over both being from Chicago in the car. We get a little bit of a VO from Anya that she felt a little left out because they had that connection. But that's sort of beside the point. Or not really, because they ended up, their ingredients were Fresno chili, cabbage, and black olives. They made an aquapaza soup. And when they presented it to the judges, Anya was a little upset that they did not mention the cabbage in the dish, which was her component.
Yeah, I get it. You're kind of nervous. That was like kind of a layup though. I would imagine for production, like, yo, this lady got fucking left out twice now. It's just like, didn't say the cabbage. So, it's funny because Bailey and Zubair present to me as just incredibly nice. So it just is all unfortunate. But made me laugh. I will say, well, let's save that for the end of the app. I have a thought. A thought on the drama. Okay.
Do
and
I
then
the
last but not least.
Judging table?
I think so. Last but not least, the red team, a.k.a. Apple Bowl Gate. We had
2025.
We have Vinny, Paula, and Lana. They had apple, corn, portobello, mushroom, and they did a smoked corn and clam chowder, andouille, and relish. Nancy, where was your head at with to apple or to not apple bowl?
I'm definitely on the not apple camp.
So was I.
It just seemed like. So it seemed like when my sisters and I were young, we used to reenact Iron Chef in our kitchens and like just make – not kitchens, kitchen, singular. And we used to like make these crazy concoctions, and like that's what the apple bowl was to me. It was like, I will put it in an apple. It was so silly. But then I was like – yeah, go ahead.
No, it also – I just didn't think the look of the soup that went in the apple was visually appealing with the green apple. Maybe there's something that could go in that apple, but I didn't want to see that in that apple.
Yeah. I will say green apple is my favorite apple, which I know a lot of people think it's sort of like basic because it's so sour and tart. But, oh, I love that punch in the face of tart green apple. Something that I loved about this is we saw Lana – like really working with that open flame oven in the kitchen, which I loved.
Nice.
So fun to watch that. So we have Vinny, who seems like from the outside a pretty square dude. And then he just comes up with Apple Bowl, which is crazy.
And I genuinely didn't think that, like, until he said Nomad, I was like, oh boy. Like, I actually just didn't think it came from a place of refinement.
Did he say Noma or Nomad?
I thought he said the Nomad.
Oh, like in New York City? Like the hotel?
Yeah.
Oh.
I believe so. That's where he worked under or with.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes Corwin. Sense. Okay. Well, either way, I was honestly, I didn't really register either way. I was more just like, to come out in the first quickfire with Apple Bowl is so ballsy. And I wonder if he had it in his head, like, I'm going to do something crazy in the first quickfire, or if the idea really came to him in that moment. Like, I wonder yeah. when he picked the apple, if he was like, I'm going to serve whatever dish I make in this apple.
I don't think he did, but I do think probably the second his head went to soup, it, like, came pretty instantaneously. Yeah. Would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would be my guess. And then, of course, like, not a spoiler alert, but just, like, a little bit of a nod to what we see from him later. I'm like, oh, boy. Okay, this guy's the one to watch. Like, he knows what he's doing.
Big time. Yeah. And I will say that the judges, I think, sort of, like, thought the Apple Bowl was a little silly, but then Tom was like, it was silly, but then when I got a little bit of it at the bottom, like, it was excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
So it paid off. It paid off.
Jokes on us. I do like it. That at least Lana got a little bit of the judges saying, yeah, I thought it was gimmicky, but it was a win-win all around, you know? It's just, yeah. I really didn't think it was going to go that direction, if I'm being honest.
And so, okay, in the top of this challenge, we have the red team, Apple Bowl. We have the yellow team, which was Katiana, Cesar, and Mimi. And then we have the green team, Tristan, Massimo, and Schwei. And we have the yellow team, ding, 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 coming out on top. Each of them is taking home $5,000 of quick fire, quick cash. To total the $15,000 prize, which is incredible to start off the competition this way.
Incredible winning. Quick correction on Vinny. He was at 11 Madison Park, not the Nomad.
Oh, EMP. Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah. I knew there was something where I was like, oh, no. He is – yeah, he worked – okay, I'm sorry. I'm just reading his bio as we were talking.
It could be both.
Did work at the Nomad and also worked at 11 Madison Park. Okay.
Everyone's right. Everyone wins.
We all win. We all get an apple.
Oh my gosh. Okay, but so we have the yellow team winning at the end of the Quickfire Challenge. Congrats to them, I suppose.
Good for you.
But let's get to the Elimination Challenge bits. Can you tell us a little bit about how they set it up and what it was?
Yes. So Elimination Challenge, we see a parade of famed Canadian chefs enter the kitchen with their own basket. We had Sheila Flaherty, Jeremy Charles, David Zilber, Dale McKay, and Nicole Gomez, the last two of which competed on season 20 of Top Chef World All-Stars. So fun to see some familiar faces. And within each of those baskets are ingredients from each of Canada's five regions. So we have the North, the Atlantic, Central, Prairie, and West.
The West.
All these baskets are looking good to me, Nancy. So the crux of the whole situation is the teams need to select a basket and create a dish with at least three of the regional pantry ingredients in that basket. And pivot, teammates are now competitors. So the yellow team is competing with themselves, and the losing chef is up for elimination from each of the five teams. On the baskets, was there any basket to you that really jumped out at you? Where was your head at?
Yeah, I would say hands down, the central region from David Zilber, rainbow trout, peaches, corn, ice wine, pea shoots, and pork. I mean, he said it best, but like, this is summer in a basket. This is a beautiful bar. Anything with stone fruit is going to get my vote. I love peaches. Yeah. I love nectarines. Like, I just wish it would be spring and summer already so I could eat some of these fruits. Like, any box with peaches is going to get my pick. What about you?
Yeah, I am. Honestly, these all looked fine to me. So just for diversity's sake, I'll go Atlantic. Though I will say I did think that the prairie and the sour cherries were really interesting. Mm-hmm. I also just love that they have like canola oil. But yeah, Atlantic seemed
nice. But
they
made sure to say cold press because I think canola oil is like kind of polarizing in the food world.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Yeah. I got a big old tub of it. Yeah, so that's where my head is at. But honestly, I think that this was sort of the case for the chefs too. I don't think anybody was disappointed by what they got.
No.
I was happy after Anya's sort of excommunication from her team in the first round that she ended up with the North, which she flags as, hey, this is great. A lot of shared flavors with Russia. So fun to see her get a little bit redeemed there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I feel like already with these baskets, like it's occurring to me that I'm going to learn a lot about Canada that I did not know.
Yes.
This season.
Right off the bat, there are some ingredients that I probably should have been smart enough to look up before this episode. So maybe we left over this, but like, what is screech rum?
I think it's just a type of rum.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm very stupid. I didn't realize. Oh my God. I'm so embarrassed. Yeah, like I thought it was either a fish or like some sort of seaweed-esque thing. I didn't realize that rum was in reference to the liquor. I thought it was like
I think it's like a moonshine.
Okay. Noted. We're going to have to just double check on that just in case. But yeah, we are definitely going to learn a lot about Canada. I definitely get a feeling that we're going to have some first Canadian challenge at some point. I think Canada came to play as they should.
Yeah.
As they should.
Anyway, dude. I'm so just about to get really excited for Canada the second we're not allowed in.
The second we're no longer allowed to go there. Ugh, the worst.
Let's chat through these. So there's a lot of food happening here. I think let's just keep it kind of high level and chat through folks' plates. But let's look at the purple team first again. So reminder, we had Henry, Corwin, Kat. They were a team. Now they're competitors. This group ends up with the prairie basket. So
which includes ribeye, walleye, red lentils, sour cherries, tomatoes, and cold-pressed canola oil.
Yummo. Henry comes out with a ribeye tartare and a delicious-looking toasted lentil cracker.
Cracker.
Corwin does a grilled ribeye and a lentil puree. Kat, which we need to talk about maybe first, does a pan-fried walleye and wild rice with some sour cherries. Kat. That was tough to watch.
It was tough to watch because at first, so as listeners will know, Kat missed ingredients on her plate. But the surprising thing was like it was sort of this slow reveal of what she missed because at first she realizes that she didn't cook enough portions of the fish. And she sends it out. She's like, oh, I don't have enough. And then it goes out. And then when we're at the table, we realize that not only are there not enough portions of fish, but not every plate got every component. Like some plates got rice, fish, and tomatoes and cherries. Some plates only got fish and rice. Some plates only got cherries and rice. They were all combinations of this. And I think that alone was, you know, enough to have the judges sort of write this dish off. It seemed like the people who got the fully composed dish, really liked it. I think it was a nice balance of flavors. I think they liked the cherries in there. But unfortunately, it's difficult to overlook the glaring omissions.
Yeah. Be that as it may, we learned a really fun fact this episode, which is that she is from Door County.
I know.
Do you think she knows Torch?
Bits. I literally had that in my notes. I said, oh my God, does Kat know Torch? ?
Everybody in Door County knows each other, I'm sure. And that includes Torch.
If you're from Torch County, you definitely know Torch.
Yeah, there's no way you have a name Torch and then do a very specific function of lighting up fish boils, and go unnoticed.
Bring back Torch.
Yeah, as far as Corwin's big, the big thing there was that the steak didn't really match the sauce. Yes. So they were like, they're both good. They just don't work together. Henry, mm-hmm. on the other hand, Henry takes this group. He's the winner here. Mm-hmm. And I think people were surprised that he used ribeye, but it used it really well. And yeah, I feel like I'm going to really enjoy watching Henry.
I'm really excited about Henry too.
Yeah.
The note on the ribeye for anyone who didn't catch it is that ribeye is a very high end cut of meat and not something you would traditionally cut up into a million tiny little pieces. Like tartare is usually reserved for meat that you maybe want to mask its quality, or, you know, like, and for ribeye being so rich and like fatty, it is an unusual cut of meat for a tartare, but it sounded so good. I mean, 2024 for me was really the year of beef tartare. I think like all these years of tuna tartare have really led me to be a huge fan of steak tartare. And so I was very excited when I saw this tartare coming out with the egg yolk custard. It also visually so bright, so beautiful. Loved, 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 wanted to try this dish.
Yum, 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 delicioso.
So next. Maybe let's look at the red team next. So we have Lana, Vinny, and Paola. And they had the West basket, which was Pacific salmon, salt spring lamb, red wheat, foraged mushrooms, hazelnuts, and plums.
Yum, yum, yum. This was a good one, too.
Yeah, more stone fruit.
This one was good because you also got two proteins.
Yeah. Like, I think they all had two different proteins.
I maybe this one just felt more distinct, you know, as like a surf versus turf. But no, yeah, you might be right. Maybe more people had that diversity.
I think they all had a choice of fish or meat.
Okay, I missed
surf
that.
Or turf.
All right. So this is the group. This is Apple Group. This is Apple Bowl Group. Mm-hmm. No apples here. Vinny, he did a confit Pacific salmon, miso hazelnut, and a consomme. I saw this dish and I was like, all right.
Yeah.
He's giving like Kristen Kish vibes, actually.
He's giving Kristen Kish. Like, he's giving Buddha. Like,
yeah.
He is very refined, very advanced. This man clearly has his skills on lock. He is a technical chef.
I keep thinking he's the Canadian one, too. I don't know why. He just looks more Canadian to me.
Oh, we'll get to Massimo. We'll get there. But yeah, his dish looked stunning.
Yeah, this made me excited for this season, honestly.
Yeah, I completely agree.
No bad bite.
No, not a single bad bite in the house. Lana's dish also looked really good to me. Lana's dish to me was sort of like if Vinny made like the EMP version, Lana's was like, I don't know, like the more accessible place that's not impossible to get a reservation and it isn't going to cost you an entire year's salary to eat at version.
Yeah.
And I say that with reverence because her dish sounded delicious. I would have eaten this in a heartbeat. She made seared salmon with dawa dawa cream, lamb fat roasted mushrooms, and hazelnut gremolata. This dish sounds so delicious. It's not as fine dining as what Vinny created, but I do think it was on equal footing in terms of creativity and execution.
Yeah.
And I think that the judges really enjoyed both of these dishes.
Yeah. And then I think Paola was maybe the stumble in this group. Mm-hmm. She attempted a mole and it just didn't pack a punch. But her biggest problem was her lamb. She did a grilled lamb with mushroom mole, and some of the lamb was over, some of the lamb was under. She knew this, but she was cooking on an open flame and there was just lack of distribution. So yeah, that was a bummer. But pretty strong showing otherwise. Yeah. Green Group, I think, was amongst, I would say Green Group is was sort of the just like consistently outperformed or outperforming yes. group. Everybody was strong here. This was the Atlantic group. So in their basket, they had cod, dull seaweed, potatoes, blueberries, and the screech rum. I don't think anybody used the screech rum.
I did not catch it going into anything.
Yeah. Which is probably for the best, probably because nobody's British and they don't want to cook with booze, as we so famously saw on Top Chef. But yeah, for to not like sweat too many details here, I think some of the highlights for this were shui, steamed cod, braised daikon, snow crab, a little egg drop sauce. Tristan had poached cod with snow crab. And a dulse seaweed mousse. That sounded super interesting to me.
Interestingly, on Tristan's plate, Tristan also forgot his sauce. He made a curry sauce. Completely forgot it on every single plate. But honestly, I kind of feel like we should look back in the history books because the judges did not miss the sauce. They all loved the dish without it.
They were a little glad that that didn't work out.
Yeah, we'll never know what the completed dish was meant to be or if it would have been good or any of that. But he pulled it off. They loved it.
I was glad to see that. I was so glad to see that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Because it looked beautiful without it. Like, it didn't look uncomposed. I mean, all of these dishes looked beautiful. Shui's looked beautiful. Massimo, who we haven't talked about. Con Ancales, what did he do?
I don't know how to pronounce it, but he essentially made little scales out of potatoes and put it on the fish so that it looked like scales,
which
we've seen before, but which the judges say,
it looks lovely.
We've seen this before. Yeah.
And he seems like the type. He seems like a guy who puts fake scales on fish and it's kind of like,
does he seem like the
fits
type?
His personality. I don't know. It seemed like kind of his vibe.
Yeah, I'm getting interesting vibes out of Massimo. I think I'm definitely getting like some pretty egocentric vibes from Massimo, if I'll say. Like, especially between this and the trailer. I think he's like, it's funny because he's the hometown hero this season. And last season, Dan Jacobs was the hometown hero. And they are such different personality archetypes. Dan was very humble. He was like, this is... No, I'm from Wisconsin. I'm so excited that everyone is here. And Massimo is like, I'm going to represent for Canada. Like, this is my town.
I love that.
And it's just I'm very digging Massimo. Different energy.
I'm digging Massimo.
He's going to bring a lot of entertainment to the screen.
Yeah. I'm just going to make this sweeping generalization this season. Like, I just think it's going to be good entertainment.
Yes, I agree. We also got in the trailer like a bit of drama, which seems kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time since Top Chef has had drama.
I'm enjoying that return to form. I think we're all emotionally mature enough to know this is TV. These people are lovely, normal people in their real lives. And let's see some people fight over some scallops. Like, that's okay.
Amen, sister. Okay, so moving on. We've done the purple team. We've done the red team. We've done the green team. So we've got yellow and blue left. Why don't we talk about the yellow team? Katiana, Cesar, and Mimi. Their basket was, did I not write down which basket they had?
Central.
They're
Central.
Your favorite.
Central. Oh, yeah, my favorite basket, duh. The rainbow trout, peaches, corn, ice wine, pea shoots, and pork. So, in this group, we have two real standouts in Katiana and Cesar. Katiana made a pork loin katsu with corn and pea shoot gravy. In general, the judges found it to be exciting, interesting. They did disagree on the gravy.
On the gravy. Wait, Kristen and Tom. Katiana.
Yeah.
Is her brother the dude from Veep?
Yes. I'm so glad you brought this up. I have it in my notes too. I saw that photo and I was like,
that was bonkers. I was like, that, I mean, he looks like a pretty standard, really attractive guy, but I was like, I just think that's the same dude. Yeah. Okay.
It is the same dude. I looked it up. Her brother is Reed Scott from Veep. So much talent in one family.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
That's cool. That's LA, baby. That's showbiz, kid.
That's showbiz. I love it. But yes, okay, so Katiana's dish, in general, people really liked it. Tom and Kristen disagreed on how the sauce played into the dish, but in general, I think there were sort of like very minimal notes on this dish.
Mm-hmm.
Cesar had the runaway hit, which was his steamed fish pepiette with grilled radicchio, corn, and pea shoot sauce. The judges were just tickled by the little pouch that he had steamed the fish in. I think they all enjoyed the surprise and delight, as we would say in the product development world, of opening up this little packet of fish and having this nice portion. And the dish was delicious.
It was so cute. It kind of like fit his vibe too. Just like really it was cute.
Yes. I really can't get over how much he looks like Danny Garcia, but I will have to.
Get over it. Yeah. I actually don't think he looks like Danny Garcia at all. Like, I don't see that really. Maybe it's just like there's a complete different vibe to them, but
there is a very different vibe to them.
Let's talk about the clunker this round, though. Unfortunately, this really sucks because I was actually really enjoying Mimi this episode. Yeah, she's fun.
She was fun.
She did a grilled pork loin, potato puree with corn burmante and peach relish. So she accidentally leaves her potatoes on the stove burling away. They get super overdone, super gummy, and she's like, I'm going to send it anyways. She does. It's a little bit flop city. And
to say the least,
kind of breaks my heart. Yeah, kind of breaks my heart. It and at the same time though, it's, I don't know. Would you rather go out on just like a stupid mistake, or would you rather go out thinking you made great food and everybody's like, no, you didn't? Like, I think I'd rather make a mistake.
This was tough. They were also like kind of no holds barred on their description of it. I believe one of the judges said elevator hospital.
Yeah, very unassuming
food.
Woman.
Yeah. And then Kristen said, I did not enjoy anything on this dish.
Woof.
Is tough. But you know what? Like, I think – I don't even know what point I was about to make. But, like, every single component of this dish did not excel. And I think that for the most part in this field, like, I didn't see a lot of clunkers on this table. And so there were some people, you know, like Paola overcooked her lamb or undercooked her lamb. It was inconsistent. Some people missed plates, but no one had quite the three strikes and you're out that Mimi's dish had.
But I feel like Mimi's got the right temperament. If it had to be anybody, she seems extremely well adjusted and will take it on the chin.
Yep, I completely agree. I liked her, and I'm excited to see her in Last Chance Kitchen. I think it'll be fun.
Hell,
which we got a little teaser for at the end of the episode. But okay, then, rounding this out, we have the blue team.
Blue.
Who got the North Basket. The North Basket had beets, carrots, crowberries, turbo, Arctic char, and oats.
Oats is a crazy one. Does anybody do anything with oats?
I didn't see anything.
I don't think I did either.
I don't think I did either.
yeah. I feel like I really was happy for Anya. Like I said, this was a cool basket for her. She made an uka, which is a fish broth with potato, carrots, dill, Arctic char, potatoes, beet caviar on a rye cracker. That beet caviar cracker situation looked super good.
It looked delicious. They seemed to think it was too crunchy. They were really playing up the sound of the crunch. But in general, yeah, I think they were really impressed with this. Then we had Zubair, who made a, I don't know how to pronounce this, mean moile. I'm going to left over what that is because I feel really embarrassed. But he made the turbo.
It's like a South Indian dish.
Okay. Noted.
That was like him in the dish.
Right. And I think the judges felt that the dish was good, but the ratio of sauce to fish was not right. The sauce was a bit overpowering, but that the dish was good and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And let's round it out with the story of the night. Miss Bailey, who right out of the gate is making a risotto on day one of Top Chef Destination Canada.
Just some like... You always think you're the exception.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think that way.
In a way, I think risotto day one is the safest day to do it because there are so many dishes. For sure. If you got to do it. Yeah.
But you don't have to do it either. You could just not do risotto.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And when asked, how does this risotto rank in the long history of Top Chef risottos? Gail said, it's not the worst, but it's not good.
Yep. That is, I mean, she wasn't on the bottom. She was on the bottom, but she wasn't the bottomest bottom.
Yeah, but it is just nobody is above the curse of risotto on Top Chef. We need these people to understand.
Don't tempt fate. No. Don't tempt fate. Don't do it. You get there, maybe you get a little just the excitement, the adrenaline. I don't know, but don't do it. Please. Yep. We'll have to talk about this when we get to predictions too. But I will say, let's chat judges table. Yep. So winners for the groups, we had Henry, Cesar, Anya, Vinny, and then the bottoms we had, I'm sorry?
And Shuai,
yes. And the bottoms we had Massimo, Mimi, Paola, Kat, Bailey, but only Mimi and Kat had to show themselves, present themselves in front of the judges.
Which I thought was interesting.
Justice was dealt swiftly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Kristen just looks around. She goes, are we all agreed?
Yeah.
Mimi, pack your knives and go.
Yeah.
Woof.
The sort of like live polling, the sort of, hey, just checking, just confirming, like, don't do that. Yep. At least make me know that you guys talked about this and you're like fully settled. Don't make it feel like there was like some ambiguity. That sucks.
Yeah. It was a pretty clean and swift judges table. It did not last long. But we should also note that Vinny won.
Vinny won. Good for Vinny. I'm actually really excited to watch Vinny. I don't mean to like dismiss that, but I will say that seeing the manner in which the dismissal happened was very refreshing coming off of watching a full season of Traitors where basically they spend half the episode just like building up the mystery around what the next person is about to say. And then the commercial happens and then they like repeat everything. Like it's just too damn long. Just drag it out. Just remove the person. Tell us who you're voting off the island. So I was very happy to see this here.
Yeah. I also think this is a factor of that there are 15 of them and like they've just spent an entire day eating like 15 plus five, like, you know, 20 plates of food.
That's so true.
I think they're just like, okay, we're done today.
That's so true. I will say that, like, I don't think they needed to kind of twist the knife after she already was, like, told to go home. Like, don't give me the critique now. I don't want to hear it. And then they, like, did the same for Kat, and she's standing there, you know, that was tough. That was tough, but that's a very small nit in what was an incredible episode.
Yeah, I loved this episode. It's off to such a strong start this season. Absolutely loved it. Do we want to do judgy table before or after predictions?
Let's do predictions and then our judgy table.
Okay, love it. So listeners, as you know, we like to make some predictions about the season. These are all in good fun. They're just, you know, classic Top Chef tropes that we see and who's going to be the one to do
it. No, it's really science-backed. We do data models.
A lot of analytics. we built an AI model for this. So, Bits, using your AI model, whom do you have, most likely to bring an obscure kitchen item?
I put Anya for this one.
Oh, and why?
I just thought she's been very vocal about her Russian heritage, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was like some crazy instrument, crazy to our, you know, Western sensibilities, but yeah, I just thought that was interesting. It was maybe a little bit offbeat of I worked in a fancy kitchen and I'm going to bring like, you know, Buddha level shit. What about you?
Yeah, I went the Buddha level shit. I went with Vinny. I think based on Apple Bowl alone, Like, I think we're going to see some weird shit from him in whatever that box is that they're allowed to fill up. I think we have some really silly tools coming out of Vinny's box.
I love that. All right. Next question. Next prediction. Most likely to be over their Whole Foods budget.
So I did Paola. Because she made a mole episode one, and mole famously has like a million ingredients. And so yeah. I think that her cooking is going to be a style that requires a lot of ingredients.
Okay. I love that. I love that. I actually went for Vinny for this one just because expensive taste and all that.
Yeah. Expensive taste. But I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say he is in the Buddha category of has studied Top Chef. Like,
yeah, I
think he's coming in with a playbook and he knows the traps to not fall into.
Completely agree. Yeah, you're right. It probably will be someone that's just like not sweating like the decimals. Very true.
Well, your pick is locked, so too bad for you.
Too bad. Beep, boop, bop. That's what my AI said.
Okay, so next up, we have most likely to stand by and defend their dish at judge's table. Bits, who do you have?
Let's go on 1, 2, 3.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. Massimo.
Massimo. Yeah.
Okay.
I knew you would have to say
one. I think there's a delay in our recording because we did it one after the other, but we both got Massimo.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
I don't think we need to expand on that one. Nope. Yeah, I think that's just pretty obvious. Yeah, okay, good. Most likely to take the blame for a team challenge. So when the stuff goes sideways on a team challenge, who's going to take the fall?
I put Cesar.
I put Zubair.
Oh yeah, I think these are both good picks.
Yeah, I'm happy with our selections there because they seem just extremely nice. This is sort of like a backhanded compliment of who seems like the nicest, decent, most decent person who would just be like, hey man, that was on me.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a compliment because it's someone who understands accountability and is willing to prioritize accountability over one's position in the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next up, our favorite category, which got blown out of the gate night one, most likely to make a risotto.
Bailey. This is our free space.
Yep. Okay. Most likely to realize halfway through the competition that they are not cooking their own food.
I put Kat Turner for this one.
Me too.
Okay. Wow. This one was hard for me though, because I actually feel like all these chefs are showing up and cooking really kind of specific to their aesthetic and their sensibilities. So I think Kat in this moment was a safe one because we saw the mad dash, didn't get everything on the plate stuff. So maybe I'm reading more into that than is meant to be, but I just felt like everybody else presented it couldn't have been anybody else in my mind based on what I saw.
Yeah. And I also think that Kat maybe represents a bit of the archetype of like untraditional background. Like she was a private chef for rock stars, you know? And I think sometimes when someone with an untraditional background comes into the kitchen, it's not necessarily that they're intimidated, but like their style and the way that they cook and the types of kitchens that they're in is very different from the Top Chef kitchen, which is way more similar to a professional kitchen. And I bet Kat's been cooking on tour buses or in someone's home or like this, that, or the other thing. And so I think there's going to be a moment in the competition where she's like, I can do what I do in this kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be a little bit of an adjustment period.
We are so smart.
So smart. We could psychoanalyze these people till the cows come home.
Mm-hmm.
And let's do it one more time. Come home, they will. Yep, most likely to win the most money.
Who'd you put?
I put Katiana.
Wow. I put Cesar.
Oh, yeah. That's good. I like that a lot.
But I do think in both of our cases, these people won this first quickfire. They already have 5K leg up. But yep. I do think that to me, César's giving cool under pressure, sort of creative, very like humble about it with the little papillon. And yeah, I'm yeah, banking on him.
Katiana is giving winner vibes. Like she's a,
yeah,
she wins challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. Completely agree. Okay. Our very last category on the chef front. And then we have a few predictions for the episodes. Most likely to have dessert as their secret weapon. I put Anya for this.
Oh, that's a nice pick. I put Corwin.
Oh, that would be secret. That would be secret.
I could see him having some tricks up his sleeves.
I think that's a totally solid guess. I like that.
Thank you so much. I think yours is too. Okay, so then we have three categories that have to do with different episodes. Knowing that this takes place in Canada, we know we're going to see a few things. The first is bits. In which episode do we think we'll see our first Canadian celebrity?
I feel like it's going to be – I'm going to say episode 6.
Oh, that late.
Yeah.
I put episode 2.
My logic is going for the sort of like low double digits versus having like 15 people to judge. Like I feel like for the celebrity famous people, they don't make them eat as much food.
That is a really good point. Didn't consider that. My thinking was like, they're going all out this season. I feel like they're going to bring in Michael Cera next week.
Yeah. I see both ways. I think we're both right. And that's why we're millennials, because we get participation trophies. Okay, next question. Which episode, Nancy, do you think will be the poutine episode?
I said episode 3.
Ooh, me too.
But it also could be 2. Here's the thing.
I know.
Because last season, cheese. I said that the cheese episode would be episode 3, and then it was episode 2. So I wonder if the poutine episode will be episode 2. But
I think in the case of Wisconsin, like Wisconsin is cheese, and I think Canada is not poutine. It is, but they're going to look at this and be like, these fucking Americans. Like, I don't think that they want to lead with that. And poutine is famously like a Quebec food. So I think it's a reasonable guess that it's not like straight out of the gate. Mm-hmm. I don't know. With these seasons, we're in Toronto, but we're calling it Destination Canada. So how much time are we going to spend in Toronto or elsewhere? I don't know. But if we're leaving Toronto, I think we're going to Montreal and we're gonna have poutine there. So I just don't know if we're leaving right away, but I do think it's gonna be early. I also said episode 3. Lastly, in the same spirit, which episode will we see maple syrup challenge?
I went episode 5.
I went episode 5.
Oh my gosh. We just stopped spending so much time together. We have had so many of the same answers.
Let's talk about like why 5 though? Why 5 for you?
So 5 for me because I think poutine for Canada, cheese for Wisconsin, that's like the very gimmicky low-hanging fruit. And I think maple syrup has like more of a history, like you tap the trees and it's an art form and it's of nature, all these things. And so I think they're going to treat it with a little more reverence than poutine. And I think that the challenges with more reverence come a little later in the season. But they can't be too late because much later in the season is all about you and your dishes and getting really complex.
Yep. Yeah. I had similar logic. Again, I think we're leaving Toronto to do the maple syrup. We're getting a demo. We're meeting some maple syrup farmers, tappers. The other thing that is occurring to me is I might be calling this early, but on the poutine challenge, I think it's going to be, you know, a creative, crazy twist on poutine. So we're going to see put some stuff on some starch, or I'll be curious to see kind of like how they stretch the definition of a poutine. But I feel like there's going to be flirting with that definition.
Oh, We're going to get a lot of different types of gravies. Someone's going to do like a katsu gravy. True. And it's going to be like sort of curry. Someone's going to do a traditional. We're going to get a lot of variations on poutine. And I am looking forward to it.
Why even bother watching at this point? We already know how it's going to go.
The week that they do poutine, we should do a celebratory poutine. We should find a poutine in New York City and go eat it.
I would do that. I would do that. I would Twist do that with you. One thing I don't think we're quite prepared to call this episode because of the nature of the challenges we have today. We had ingredients being selected by the chefs are our counters. So for folks that have been listening for a time, we like to select, we like to make a prediction basically on the ingredients that we're going to see the most of in the season. And then we track how frequently those ingredients pop up. I don't think it's a fair place to start with that this episode, because like I said, the chefs didn't have to pick any of their ingredients. So we'll check in on this next week, maybe.
Could not agree with you more. Also, I didn't really, even though they didn't pick their own ingredients, I didn't really see a lot of commonality across the board in a good way. Like last season in episode one, we saw like four different gremolatas alone.
Yeah. And I think
none of that, like none of them really fell for super contemporary, like, I mean, we said this word a lot, but like gimmicks, you know, there, I didn't see like caviar on everything or the, you know, it just felt like they were all really doing their own thing, which was cool.
Yeah. Nothing cliche, really nothing doing trite. Their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, it didn't feel like anybody was masquerading or just putting on airs. Yeah, it just, good cooking. All that being said, we let's double back. So we said goodbye to Mimi this episode. We have a segment, would you eat that? We kind of asked each other, would we eat the losing dish? Nancy, are you eating Mimi's gloopy doopy potatoes?
Unfortunately, no. Even if it were, I think, cooked perfectly, this is not a dish that appeals to me all that much. What about you?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'll pass this one, but I would definitely have her quick fire. That looked delicious.
Yeah, that sounded delicious.
All right. And now we come to our judgy table. So this is, we take 60 seconds to basically rant on something about the episode, about really anything. Honestly, it's really not about the episode. Sometimes it's about the episode. Sometimes it's about something random that just pissed us off that day. So Nancy, do you want to kick it off?
Sure. Yeah.
I can kick it off if you need a beat.
Okay.
Mine's not very
You take it away.
Formed.
You do our first judgy table of season 22. I always talk first. And you know I'm working on that. So I'd love you to go first. Are you ready?
Yep.
Bits, your judgy table starts now.
Too much camaraderie on Top Chef. Give me the tension. Give me the low stakes, high stakes drama of whatever comes with being in that Top Chef atmosphere. It is okay. I know I kind of already talked about this. I don't judge you for how you show up on Top Chef. It's TV. It's all good. Have fun while you're there. We know you all like each other. We know you all respect each other. I won't hold it against you, but I want to see people throw down in the Whole Foods. I want to see tempers flare. Like, just give it to me straight. That's my judgy table. And that's why I'm so excited for this season.
That was a really fun judgy table. I tend to agree with that. We're looking for a little entertainment value. So
that's showbiz, kid.
If we could get some stolen pea puree, if we could get a I'm not your bitch, bitch. If we could get, what are some more iconic moments? I don't know. Toilet halibut. I'd like it
Toilet
all.
Toilet halibut. But Nancy, I scraped the bottom of the barrel. This was a really good episode and it's going to be a really, really amazing season.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do one. I don't really know how much juice I have in this one, but I'm going to try. Are you ready? Nancy, your judgy table starts now. Fish soups really don't do it for me. I like a chicken stock. I've just never been into a fish broth, I don't think. I'm trying to think of a fish broth I may have had. I guess I've had agadashi tofu. Does that count? But no, I don't want a fish soup. I want a leek and potato. I want a chili, which I don't know if that counts as soup. But anyway, all to say, we just got a lot of fish soup in this episode, and I hope that we don't get as much fish soup for the rest of the season. And that is what I feel.
Somebody get this girl a fish soup.
It was just a lot of fish soup. Like at the end of the
day. It was a lot of fish soup. I honestly never thought about it. The only fish soup I ever think about is bouillabaisse. And I like getting bouillabaisse, but then I think about the Kitchen Confidential and how bouillabaisse is sort of what they do with all the old seafood. And I don't know if that's true anymore or if that's just like a rumor from 35 years ago or 20, whenever that book was written.
Yeah, I think it's probably its origins, but it's now been elevated.
Right, right. So I hear you on that one. The thing that kind of throws me for a loop, which I've been seeing a lot more in my feed lately, is like a cream-based fish soup. Like a Nordic, like potato, dill, salmon.
I have been seeing that, and I think I'm even more out on a cream-based fish soup.
Yeah. I want to try it. I think I am too, but I want to try it and know for sure. But yeah, it's funny. We got this huge cookbook called the Nordic Cookbook. It's truly probably weighs 25 pounds. It's extremely thick. And we got it and was like, oh, wow, it's going to be amazing. And I don't mind when cookbooks don't have photos or, you know, a few pages don't have photos. Like there's almost no photos in this cookbook. And all of the ingredients are crazy. It's like whale blubber. It's like stuff that you just can't procure. So on top of just like the blind faith that is required to just make 80% of the shit that's in this book, like the only recipe we've reliably cooked out of this book is like a shrimp salad, that's it. It's like shrimp and homemade mayonnaise.
Okay, this has some sort of vegetable in it.
Yeah, like I've heard of this before, but truly it's like seal and like, you know, when you watch those nature shows and like, yeah, they like bury this fish underground for a year until it ferments. And it's like that level.
I love it. I'm obsessed. Okay, well, we won't yap your ears off any longer because this is a supersized episode. But listeners, we cannot wait to get into season 22 with all of you. We have some incredible guests. Next week, you'll be hearing from the one, the only, the Riz King of Top Chef himself, Joseph Flam, winner of season 15. We are so excited to have him on the pod. And we're going to have more guests coming down the line. But tune in on Monday for the episode with Joe. Otherwise, we'll catch you next week on episode 2, season 22 of Compliments to the Chef.
Bye-bye.
Bye.